So I'm going to talk to you about what we can use canopy temperature to measure in terms of plant water use. And let me tell you the conclusion. The conclusion is simply that we need to take into account the leaf energy balance or the canopy energy balance to interpret canopy temperature. And I hope that I convince you of that in this talk. So my motivation here is that we have good data from many species, and in this case wheat, from a colleague, Waleed Sadak, that under high VPDs, so high air vapor pressure deficits, transpiration goes up. And that implies that stomata don't close. And we have other genotypes where they either reach a maximum transpiration rate or some other phenomenon, but the implication in those genotypes is that the stomata are closing and regulating water use. And that implies that there is valuable genetic variation out there in water conservation in early parts of the season, so that at the end of the season, the water conservative parts that close their stomata have more water in the soil for drought. The problem is that these are done in the greenhouse and growth chambers, and that's true of almost all the work. So it would be nice to phenotype for transpiration rate variation at high VPD in the field. And the only system I know of doing that is the, and of course measuring hundreds of genotypes. And the only system I know of is the IQRISAT system in that Vincent Vardes has produced. Other than that, the only thing we're left with is a proxy, and that's canopy temperature. So that's my motivation for using canopy temperature. I'm going to look at some theory, some statistics, and experimental tests. And before I go on, I should say that in 1989, Smith et al. Explored this in a very similar manner to the one I'm doing. So if you would like to read more on this, I think that's a good starting point. A good starting point for this discussion is to point out that we use generally canopy temperature difference between the air. And here's a nice graph. If a plant is transpiring at its potential transpiration rate, then it's going to be cooling its canopy through evaporative cooling. And stomata closure will then result in higher canopy temperatures relative to the air. So it will move up like this. The other point to note is that at higher vapor pressure deficits, there's more transpiration or potential transpiration, and therefore you can get a greater difference between the air and the canopy or the leaf. The other important point to note is that other components of the environment other than VPD, such as net or solar radiation and wind speed and so forth, are important because we're dealing with a leaf energy balance or a canopy energy balance. Those two are different. So here's a leaf energy balance. I won't explain it anymore. I assume you know enough about it. And we can use those to model what would happen to a leaf, say, when it undergoes stomata closure. So here, stomata are closed. And what happens is, relative to air temperature, leaf temperature goes up. And I regret putting species names here, because this is modeled from a leaf perspective, not from a canopy perspective. So please scratch that those are real names. But the point is that there's likely to be species differences between the responses to, say, stomatal closure in canopy temperature difference. There are a couple of other points to note here. The one is that the slope at high stomatal conductances is lower than the slope at low stomatal conductances. So if you're going to go out and phenotype for big differences in whether the plant has or doesn't have water, you're likely to be able to detect those very easily. So first order approaches are likely to work well. Second order approach is where you're trying to distinguish between plants that have shut the stomata relatively subtly, like the VPD example, are going to be more difficult to detect. So I think that's the take-home message. And the other point is that since this is an energy balance, the environmental conditions that you model this for matter. So everything here will change a bit if you change the environmental conditions. So let's pursue that a little bit further. Here are three hypothetical genotypes. Here's one that doesn't shut its stomata and has increasing transpiration rate with VPD. Here's one that constitutively has a low stomatal density or stomatal conductance and always has a low transpiration rate. And here's one that shuts its stomata to maintain a maximum transpiration rate. And if we translate that into the equivalent diagram that I showed before, the kind of behavior that we're looking for is this plateauing of leaf temperature or canopy temperature difference to air temperature. Okay, so that's what we're going to try and find. And before I go any further, I'd like to point out that taking into account the environment is important. So this is a normal day, in spring day in Davis. Here is air temperature, and during the portion of the day where there is sun, the air temperature never stabilizes. So, and that implies that VPD doesn't stabilize either. So, even if we can phenotype in a short period of time and you're convinced that there's no variation in environment during that period, which I'm not necessarily sure would be the case, you would still have variation between days. So, almost regardless of how you do any measurements, whether it's an instantaneous photograph of your entire field or not, you still probably have to take into account the environment. And we can do that statistically in a number of ways. So this mirrors the work of Smith. We can account for canopy temperature differences simply as a genotype effect. And let's think about the sample sizes here. At a minimum, and this is maybe not a practical minimum, you probably need 3 replicate measurements per genotype in order to get any reasonable chance of finding a difference. We could account for BVPD as a simple additive effect, and if we did that, we'd be fitting all slopes for all genotypes with the same data. And that would mean we really have to increase the number of samples by not that much. So again, not a practical minimum, but maybe 5 replicate measurements per genotype. And we have to embrace the fact that we need to measure under a variety of VPD conditions. Okay. But this is not the kind of behavior that we're actually looking for, right? We're looking for an interaction effect. So we could look for differences in slopes in this relationship. And suddenly we get to the point where it's no longer really practical to measure this many points. We're talking about 20 or 30 points per genotype that we under a large variety of VPDs. I should note that there are other things that we should account for too. And we're actually looking for nonlinear effects like this, and maybe a polynomial's appropriate way of approaching that. We probably need 20 points at low VPD and 20 points at high VPD to even begin to ask whether or not we can get a effects. So there's a different approach. I wouldn't necessarily call this mechanistic, this approach, but we're accounting for things mechanistically in the sense that we're trying to account for the leaf energy or canopy energy balance. The other way of doing it would be more a black box approach, and that is to say that, well, VPD is kind of the same as time of day, and that the particular set of measurements you make across days or within a day also accounts for VPD effects and other effects like differences in soil moisture between the days. So this would be a way of accounting for these effects less mechanistically, more of a black box approach, but it might be effective. So I measured canopy temperature using an infrared thermometer on 2 populations, and we expected in the one diverse population some variation in stomatal conductance, and the other population, a real population, had a parent that was variable in stomatal conductance. So we expected some variation. And the one point I should make is that both these populations were stratified by height, so that generally tall plants were grown next to tall plants. And I'm only going to really talk about the irrigated treatments. So let's not look at genotype by environment interactions just yet. Here we have just a genotype model fitted to the real population. And if you add VPD, it accounts for a significant amount more of the variation. If we go to the other population, the genotype effect is not big, but it was, actually I can't remember if it was significant in this case, but if you added VPD, it accounted for a huge amount of the variation. But what was interesting is if you added the set of the measurement and the time of day, it accounted for a lot of variation. And if you added the VPD effect after that, there was either no significant improvement or there was a significant improvement in this other population, but it accounted for a small amount of the variation. So the implication is you can take either approach. One is a black box approach and one is a more mechanistic approach, either of which work. But we're not accounting for genotype by environment interactions. So I decided not to do that second set of analyses. And the reason is, here are my most highly replicated genotypes. These are checks. So I have more measurements for these than any of the other genotypes. And we find that although there might be some variation, we can't reasonably fit anything to this data to, we can't expect to find genotype by environmental interactions with this kind of variation. So that's probably not a parabola. We found that height differences are important. So here we have short genotypes that are 6 degrees hotter than per meter difference in height. And that was an interesting effect, an important one that we thought we needed to account for. But that effect disappeared on a second day that we measured the plants. And in fact, on different days we found negative effects, so hot, short genotypes. And some days we found cool short genotypes. And this has been noted before. And what we found was that the positive slope of this relationship or negative slope depended on VPD. Now that's not that convincing. If we, this is the explanation of why, I believe that it's due to wind sheltering of the short plots. But what is interesting, I'm not going to explain that too much. What is interesting is that we can model that as a leaf energy balance. So I've used a leaf energy balance here. So we modeled that as a lower wind speed in the short genotypes. And what I find fascinating here, sorry for the complex graph, but the slope of that relationship depends upon the environment. Wind speed, radiation, VPD, and stomatal conductance. So the effect of height on relative height is dependent on environment. And that would differ between different crops. So you might have a positive or negative effect on some days. And this is of consequence because this is a interesting study. They were aware of this effect because they found that canopy temperature co-located in the QTL analysis with plant height. And they found a negative effect, but I think that's because they measured it in cold environments. That effect would switch to a positive effect or have no effect in other environments. And obviously it's complicated because this is a leaf energy balance. So I think there are solutions, and I encourage you to go and look at commercial solutions. This is an open source solution that we had for $1,000 for 20 sensors. I'm willing to share that. But I would like to point out, and I can talk to you later about this, that even if you have much more data and that's much more convincing, you still need to take into account the leaf energy balance. Okay, sorry I've zoomed through that. Is it time for questions?
Yeah, we have time for one question.
One question. Yes?
Yeah, and in our own work, we've seen that routing depth of water supplies pretty much determining differences in canopy temperature under moisture limiting. And I think you also need to, probably also need to consider sink.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'd also like to caution that there may be other species that have much less of these effects. So, yeah.